Word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. While an increasing number of states and retailers are looking to pass GMO labeling laws, planting genetically modified corn, soybeans, and cotton remains the norm among North American farmers. Seed makers claim that modified or traded crops resist pests and disease and reduce the need for expensive herbicides and pesticides. In pockets across the nation, however, farmers who once championed GMO seeds are complaining that they no longer deliver on those claims. Some are reverting back to conventional seeds for their commodities crops. Elizabeth Reut is a contributor for FERN, that's the Food and Environment Reporting Network. She wrote the article, The Post-GMO Economy, for the winter issue of Modern Farmer. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hello there.
You write about the farmer Chris Hugerich. He farms about 2,800 acres in Iowa and has experimented with planting non-GMO crops over the past few years. What motivated him?
Well, Chris was a full-on adopter of genetically modified seeds, as was his father before him. But he started looking at the price of corn, and he knew that it had been very high and everyone had done very well with corn. But he knew that it was going to drop, and he also noticed that he was spraying his GM corn and beans just as much as he would have been if they weren't genetically modified. In other words, they weren't working. He saw that he had a lot of weeds that were resistant to Roundup. So he started thinking, why am I spending all this money to spray these seeds and paying so much more for these genetically modified seeds? Genetically modified seeds cost $100 to $150 per bag more than the conventionals.
And he was planting corn, correct?
He was doing corn and soy, but he doesn't grow any conventional soy, so I limited my story to just the corn. Mm.
There are so many small-scale farms that avoid GMO seeds for ideological reasons. What I found remarkable about your article is you found so many mainstream farmers on the scale of Chris, you know, thousands of acres, who planted GMO varieties now returning to conventional seed. Now, was this always about cost rather than ideology?
I can't say because I only looked for farmers who were doing it for non-ideological reasons. That's what I was interested in, just the economic case and the sort of entomological case and the biological case. Farmers who were saying these traits aren't working, we've got weeds that are resistant to the Roundup, we're paying for benefits that we're not getting, and so they were giving up these seeds just looking at their balance sheet. Chris said, I spray both my GM corn and my conventional corn twice with herbicides and twice with pesticides. And I said, well, why are you spraying the traded corn if it's supposed to be protected? And he said, I do it for peace of mind.
Mm. Any idea of the kinds of numbers of those who are reverting to conventional crops?
No, but it is not hard to find them. They are all over the country. You know, there's more than 300,000 farmers growing corn in this country, planting 97 million acres of corn. And everywhere you look for these farmers on blogs and websites and through extension services, you can find farmers here and there. That is the news, is finding them. No one goes looking for people who are growing the genetically modified seeds because they are the norm. They're not the story. But it isn't hard to find them, and they're in niche places.
What role, then, does geography play in whether farmers have a vested interest or an economic interest in planting conventional or GMO seeds?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question because there's a front-end reasons and back-end reasons for doing this. The back-end is the market. Some of these farmers who grow conventional corn can get a premium from buyers of the corn, and Chris Hugerich is one who gets a premium bringing his corn to a plant in Blair, Nebraska that uses it to make PLA, which is polylactic acid, and they make a form of a bio-based plastic out of his corn.
Hmm.
They don't want GM corn, so they pay him a premium. Other farmers in other parts of the nation who live near river systems where they can export their corn, put it on barges and export it to other nations that don't want GM corn, those buyers will pay a premium for conventional or organic corn or soybeans. But many other farmers are stuck without access to these rivers. I mean, they could truck it to the rivers, but there goes your premium. If you're spending your money trucking your grain to a premium market, it doesn't work out so well. So geography plays a role for the export. It also plays a role in whether you have certain pest pressures. Some parts of the country, there's too much rootworm pressure or corn borer, and so people have to use a lot of pesticides or go for the traded corn that will resist these pests, but some people don't have pressure, and so they're freed up to go with a conventional seed because they don't have to be fighting rootworm, for example.
Are there complications, however, in reverting from GMO or traited seed to conventional seed? I've read all kinds of stories of farmers who wanted to get off of manufactured seed and their crops got contaminated, you know, seeds spread in the wind, and they actually ended up having to pay for seed reuse. What are some of the issues involved with that process?
Yes, it can be complicated. Chris didn't talk to me too much about that. I think it's because he grew soybeans around his non-GMO corn. But it can be difficult to revert to conventional seed if you're surrounded by GM corn. But farmers have said that if you talk to your neighbors and you stagger your planting so that they mature at different times, that you can avoid the cross-pollination. So you do have to be more thoughtful and more timely. Maybe in some places it just isn't going to work. But yes, you're right about contamination. There is a certain amount of contamination that is allowed. I think it's 0.9% of a load that you bring in can show some genetically modified seed. So there is a small tolerance. But if you go over that, you could lose all of your premium that you were going to get on that load.
Yeah, I guess this is probably coming into play now that we have several states, Whole Foods markets, one big, powerful retailer pushing for GMO labeling laws. Stonyfield Farm here in New Hampshire also making a big push there. So there is money to be made in the non-GMO field. Do you think that motivation is enough for farmers to change their ways?
I think that there's this big disconnect. Those farmers that I was talking to, these commodity growers, aren't growing corn or beans that are going onto the supermarket shelf directly from them to them. So there's going to be this, what I think is a kind of slow trickle-down effect, and you have consumers who are pressuring Whole Foods and Target. Target is coming out this coming year with a line of food that's GMO-free. Chipotle is doing it with some of their ingredients, and they've said on their website that they can't find enough GMO-free feed to ensure that all the, you know, chicken and pork and beef that they serve could be labeled GMO-free. Mm. But they're pushing toward that. So where I think we'll see the growth is in seed dealers, and people who make animal feeds are looking to source more of the conventional grain so that they can up their operations to feed the animals that will go onto the store shelves.
So there's clearly an opportunity for non-GMO seed companies here. Are they stepping up?
Yes, there is a lot of growth of seed companies, new and existing, expanding their lines of non-GMO seeds. They're the smaller companies, but there are more of them, and they have seen pretty vigorous growth in the last couple of years, like doubling their sales every year for the last two, three, or four.
Well, Elizabeth, your article is called The Post-GMO Economy. Now, if food labeling goes through in several states and consumers express a preference for it, how do you see this manifesting? What is this future, this post-GMO economy, for America's big ag farmers?
I think in this future we might see more markets for farmers who are brave enough to go back to conventional seed to say, no, this isn't working for me. And farmers who do see that there is a back end for them, that they can save money up front, and that they've got more places to sell their conventional seed to, and that they do remember how to go out there and look at what's going on in their fields and not just rely on this technology, and really do what farmers do best, you know, work their land, nourish their land, look at what they're growing and respond to what's happening in their fields. And make a good crop and make a good living at it.
Elizabeth Royt speaking there about her article, The Post-GMO Economy, which appeared in the winter issue of Modern Farmer. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Virginia.
Now you can read the article for yourself. There's a link at wordofmouthradio.org.